You are listening to The Edge, a podcast for personal development junkies and visionaries living right at the precipice of oh shit meets fuck yeah. I'm Nadia Munda, an embodiment and relationship coach and a lover of all edges. Stick around to listen to raw, unpolished conversations where we explore our personal and collective edges in all their erotic glory.
I'm just so excited to get a chance to have you because, you know, I know how much is going on for you these days. I look at Facebook and I'm like, she has so many projects happening. And I know you just recently moved, I think, right?
I actually just finished packing my house in Berlin yesterday, literally. Like and the shipping container comes and we're packing up the shipping container. So I move in like 2 weeks.
Wow. Yes. I mean, that alone is like a whole project. And then you've got like a million other things going on. But so thank you so much for being here just because I know you're super busy.
Yeah. Thank you for reaching out. It feels really sweet to reconnect after all these years and lifetimes.
You know, I was feeling back into it, and I have this thing that happens where I first meet people, and I remember, I don't know if this was actually the first time we met, but I remember, I think we were all like skinny dipping in a pool and you were like in this like really tender spot. And I remember just being like, I really dig her. Like I just, there's something about, because for me, it's just my body, you know, it's just like, I resonate, I don't resonate. And that doesn't, you know, mean anything. It's just that, oh, okay. There's something magnetic about this person. And it's been so beautiful to watch your journey from having met you at a time where it really felt like there was this dissolution to watching you build so many things. And, and you know, not just projects, but also a family, which I'm really excited to hear a little bit more about. So it's just been really inspiring just from, I guess, one woman and embodied human to another. Like, it's just really cool to see someone really do the very, very typical, like rising from the ashes, journey. And I'm sure, I know it's been like, it's not as simple as like, we just move up, right? It's like a whole, and I guess we'll get into that. Yeah. Okay. So what I'm really interested in hearing about at the moment is just sort of what's been lighting you up, because I know you've got so many things going on and there's a place where your energy is really blowing. And so tell me a little bit about just what's the latest, what's been so important to bring into the world right now.
Yeah. I mean, I have some hesitation because there is so many things and so many important things, but I would feel guilt if I didn't say my daughter first. So my daughter is of course like number one, amazing motherhood journey, but that's a whole nother like, well, I'm sure that chapter will come back up. But what I'm super excited to be birthing into the world right now is, you know, I spent the last 9 years building a brand, retreat, probably like an experiential education in intimacy and relationship with embodied intimacy. And through that process and through what's been happening globally, just around group facilitation, there was just this moment and this turning that just came in, and this part of me just said, we need to start to have like ethical standards and a basic level, like how do we need to be trained in order to be facilitators? Like, okay, we did the Wild Wild West years. That was awesome. That was fun. We learned a lot, and that era is over now. Like we need to actually, like there's no more excuses for sloppiness here. We need to actually just build a standard of how we do group facilitation now. And so that was really what was coming through. And so I just launched the Field Facilitator Training, which is in its first year. And I'm just living, breathing, eating this program right now. It's just like, it is my whole life. And getting ready to launch the second year, which is also just like, I mean, the first year of something is so amazing because it becomes, you know, it goes from nothing to an actual like thing that you can touch and play with and mold. And so I'm in every learning, even the really, really hard ones that are coming to, is just joyful. It's like, because I love it so much. You know, I'm just like, oh my God, we get to learn that too. And like, ouch, that hurts. And awesome, this is a learning too. So, so that's what we're building through this first year, is a curriculum in how to teach, because it's also, we're teaching the field. And it's something that is like part of the question that people gave me when I kind of set out to do this, was like, can you even teach that? And I'm like, I think I can. And we're going to really like, we're going to take a really good shot at trying. So we're bridging like embodied group facilitation with like trauma informed, but it's like trauma informed, but I actually personally don't think trauma informed is enough. You know, it's not enough just to have the information when you're working with groups. You actually have to know how to meet it. So it's somewhere between trauma-informed and trauma therapy, but it isn't actually trauma therapy because no one's being trained to be a therapist, you know? So it's somewhere in the middle of like how to have the information, but how to actually also work with it when it shows up in the space, in the room, in between you.
And do you,
Yeah.
Well, did you feel that when you were looking around in the spaces that you got to see, there was a particular thing, like big no-no that was coming up where you were like, okay, we need to get this figured out through creating a curriculum that is a more, you know, trauma sensitive or informed?
Yeah. I mean, I think that the biggest piece was the piece where facilitators were saying to people, one of our rules or agreements is you have to just be self-responsible in this space. And that's your responsibility. If you're in something or challenged, you need to just be able to ask for help and get what you need. And it like, that was the piece that let me know, like, it doesn't work like that. Mm-hmm. That's not possible for many people when they go into a real full-blown trauma response. They can't ask for help. So if we keep putting that on them, we're actually just encouraging a culture of shame, because then what happens is they can't ask for help. So they look around and it creates for me a culture of pretending, where people shut down to what's actually happening and they start to do the thing they see everyone else is doing to be accepted and liked, right, versus being real and honest with what's actually happening.
Yeah.
Because that shouldn't be happening, because they should just be self-responsible enough to figure it out and get through it and ask for what they need. And it just doesn't work like that. So then we end up creating more split and more tear, which is essentially like just more kind of group trauma from the overwhelm of not being able to handle being in those situations.
Yeah. That's such a good point, right? Because it's true. Like if I'm in the experience of being incredibly, you know, triggered and in a trauma wound, it's like, it's my little girl that is fully active in my nervous system. And so, when someone's asking me to be an adult and advocate for my needs, it's actually really hard to do that if like the primary part of me that's online is my little girl. And so I can really see how as facilitators, when we say, hey, I'm going to trust you, because in a way it's also beautiful to give someone agency, right? Like to be like, hey, I'm going to trust you to tell me where your boundary is. But like you said, it's so, and I see this, especially in the world of embodied intimacy and the more like tantra spaces, where it's there already, we're working with so many edges. So then something will come up and our little girl or, you know, our inner child comes up and it's like, okay, we think that we are the adult making the decision now, but it's actually not the case anymore. And I know when my friends are like, what do you need? When I'm totally like freaking out, I'm like, I don't know. Can you tell me? I don't know what I need.
Exactly. Exactly. Because from that child state, you don't know what you need. You need a parent to support or help you, you know? And that's like the number one cue to me too, is when if I ask someone like, do you know what you need right now? And they're like, no, it's like, okay, you're connected to a younger part, huh? Like, yeah, I am actually, there is a younger part. And just that opening of just making contact with where they're at in that moment, which is authentic and real and allows more of them to be present there, is usually the peeking into the window that opens a whole new world of possibility.
Wow, this is such an important conversation. I feel like it's going to shift everything. So first of all, just thank you for doing this work, because as a facilitator as well, and someone who also trains people and also like tries to be as trauma-informed as possible, I'm really like feeling the potency of this piece and how rampant it's been. And it's not no one's fault, right? Like we're all trying our best. And the Wild Wild West chapter, like you said, was all of us just being like, no one knows, because there was no way to lead. Like we just all were like, let's try this, let's try that. Oh, that did not go well, right? Like there's like, and yeah. So now there's this like settling of the dust and going, okay, what is actually the most loving for everyone, right? And how do we dance between allowing someone to have agency and not being in a way the person that is controlling the space or choosing, you know, what the guidelines of this are, and at the same time still being the adult and, like you said, the space holder in the space when those little parts do come up. Someone has to show up and be like, here's what is actually going to be okay and safe for everyone in the space. So yeah, man, that is so important. Okay, good. Yeah. I feel very hopeful.
Yeah. And you know, I want to say something. It feels important because, you know, the more I talk about this, the more I also become a target for like people finding proof that, how do I want to say this? Like, I still hold spaces today where people get triggered or get re-traumatized or like go into those states. And I'm not holding it that it's possible for that not to happen.
Yeah.
So I want to be clear about that. I don't think that trauma being happening or being activated in a space is something that we should collectively be trying to avoid. Mm-hmm. I actually think it's part of the process. It's like it needs to come up and hopefully does come up, particularly in these spaces, because there's an accelerated awakening chamber that we're also opening up together with our collective consciousness that makes it possible that we can heal or move through or create a different conclusion to that story or a different imprint or a new act of triumph. Like there are so many new possibilities that are coming in. And I still have it that sometimes it sneaks by me. Like sometimes someone has told me like, I was completely frozen the whole day. And I'm like, really? Like, you know, there are still those moments where I'm like, wow, that was really sly or sneaky, or I didn't catch that. And it's like, there's always a new learning in this new chapter of our awareness. And so I just want to preface by not claiming any kind of mastery or over this. Part of the reason I'm doing this training is because I'm like, I really want to learn this better. Mm. Like, I really want permission to be in a group of people who wants to go there with me and say, we all really want to learn this, not because we're all like, we're perfect at this now and we've just totally got this figured out.
Yeah.
No. So anyway, that just felt important.
Yeah. I so appreciate that because permission to be human and all of it is so important while we also hold ourselves to the standard of trying to do better always, right? Like it's just that, it's everything is that dance. It's like never going to be this or that. And I remember when I first started my certification program and I started teaching, my number one fear was like, oh my God, what if we trigger people in this space? And I remember after consulting with like three different, you know, trauma experts, because I was like, I cannot release this curriculum until for sure everyone has checked it. And like, I was so terrified of that. And I remember everyone saying exactly that, like that the point is actually not to avoid trigger, because trigger is what helps with transformation. It's about how do you titrate it? How do you not have it become an even bigger trauma than it was before? And like just working with the body on like letting it slowly release as opposed to it being this big explosion. And I was like, oh, got it. Right, right, right. And I know that when my teacher trainees come in, it's exactly the same thing. They're always like, the number one question I get is like, okay, but what happens if people start to like freak out in the room, you know? And I'm like, okay, don't worry. We got this, right? So I think we're always in the same thing. Like I'm in that place where as a trainee of trainer of trainees, I'm still in that constant experience of how can I do this better? And what do we need to learn? And we're all just figuring it out as we go. But I applaud you for, just the courage to open even the conversation around it, because I think that is an important piece of us moving forward collectively. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it's good, and it's been incredibly rewarding, and I'm just so looking forward to the continued evolution of how it developed.
So I know right now you're doing these in person in Europe, right? Yeah. And we actually have a lot of people who listen to this podcast in Europe. It's about 50-50. So,
US and Europe, basically.
Mm-hmm, yeah, pretty much. I mean, of course, I'm not ignoring all the other countries, but that tends to be like my clients are sort of half-half. And so are there plans to extend that out of Europe?
Yes. So the plan with the field is to switch countries every year. Oh, so this awesome. Year, the 2023 is in Berlin, 2024 will be in the UK, and 2025 might be the US. So
okay,
we'll see. I'm still looking for a venue and kind of putting feelers out, but it feels like that we might go to the US and then we'll circle back to Europe.
Awesome. Cool. Cool. Yeah. Okay. Everyone's got to keep an eye out, because I feel like a lot of people listening now or watching are like, I'm bookmarking, the year. Yeah, I know I am. I'm very interested. So I'd love to talk a little bit about, as you're moving into this space, you know, both in, I guess, the workspace, or also just moving into moving, right, to a whole nother country. And I know that part of the move, from my understanding, is that you're in the process of slowly building not just a home, but an actual location in order to run events and things like that. So in the process of all of this, I'm curious, what's been like a personal edge that you've been working?
Interesting. Where I'm moving to is an island, and it's part of a cluster of islands called the Azores Islands. And they refer to this area as like the Hawaii of Europe. It's like a 2-hour flight from Lisbon. It's part of Portugal, and it's a 4-hour direct flight from New York. So it's like right in the middle of the Atlantic. It's been primarily hidden gem for a long time. And it just ticks a lot of boxes around having mild temperatures, having super like fertile soil from the volcano that it sits on, mm-hmm. and just being connected to both, like close enough to both Europe and the US, which really meets my international heart's needs. And so the vision is that there's a community project now that really my partner is leading, called Alma do Solo, which means soul of the soil. And it's about like, it's a land regenerative project. So it's about like, how do we live in connection to the soil, which, you know, where we come from the soil, we eat from the soil, and we go back into the soil. And it's about creating a more holistic relationship to living in relation to the land. And then of course there'll be like an education center and events and retreats and a whole, like, it's like a small village project, which is, it's really the community that's showing up in support of this. I mean, it's really a magical thing, because I don't know so many community projects that have started this way. Usually like some rich guy who like buys some land and then invites his friends, and then they invite, but this is really like the group of people. There is no guy at the top. I mean, my partner and a few other people that are really important are stewarding the main vision, but like financially everyone is contributing. It's not one financial investor, it's everyone. And it's really special in that way, that anyone can be involved and have a say and get their hands in it rather than joining something. But in this, we went to the Azores and fell in love and found a beautiful little farmhouse and found some land, and I was a yes and to all of this. And then as the project developed, it started growing so fast. Like, it went from us getting a house to then 24 hectares to then 100 hectares to then 250 hectares. And now there's like a group of 500 people who's interested in the project. And I noticed like, and I, like you said, like, I love new projects. Like, I do. I love expansion. I love getting bigger. Like it's exciting for me. And when this project got this big, in addition to everything else, it was probably like the first time in my life where my energy body was like, this is actually too much. Like you can't hold this too. And that hasn't happened to me so many times in my life in such a clear way. And my heart is so in it at the same time. And so, there's like two layers of that are an edge for me. One is just like the edge of really being at my, like, because I don't think people also understand, like, when you hold the container for whatever it is, whether it's an event or a family gathering or a village project, it, like, there is a literal energetic container that you're holding that all of that has to be able to pass through. Mm. And so my edge was just finding that, like, I found an edge of a container that was too big for me to hold. Maybe by itself as a primary, it would have been fine. But like, in addition to all of my other threads that I have open right now, it was just like, and in a similar way, it's also my partner and I, you know, I have projects, he has projects, we have a child together. There's also an edge in our relating where it's like, we tipped into the projects becoming the priority instead of our relating, because there's been so much energy with the projects. They've been beautiful, but it made our relating take a really big backseat. So we're also in a big reevaluation of how to do that differently, or what needs to change. Because yeah, we've lost the intimacy that we had a deeper connection to once before.
Yeah.
Hi, love. Just wanted to take a moment out of this conversation to let you know there are so many ways to start your embodiment and intimacy journey. It is not necessarily having to work privately in a coaching container with me. There is a whole page on NadiaMunla.com under the tab self-study that is dedicated to anyone who's looking to just start their journey. So whether it's an embody at home class that you want to start to bring into your morning or evening routine to just move the energy, to explore your different feminine archetypes, or maybe it's something in the world of intimacy and sexuality. I've got master classes from everything around energetic sex to exploring monogamish type relationships and lots more. So definitely go take a look at the page, NadiaMunla.com, and then go to the tab that's self-study. And for those of you who are here on this podcast listening, I've gotten so many DMs from beautiful, devoted listeners sharing with me how much of an impact these conversations have had. And I really just wanted to give back the love with a special 50% off code. So if you go to the checkout on any of the classes that are there and you put in podcast love, all one word, in the coupon code on the way out, right? You will get that 50% off as a thank you from me. I am so fired up around the topic of embodiment and intimacy that I can't not nudge you in the direction of actually getting into the practices, and that is the place to start. So definitely go check that out. And of course, if you do want to work privately with me, always, that is always an option. Just shoot me an email, Nadia@NadiaMunla.com. Let me know what you're looking for. Everything from, you can start with a single session. And if you let me know you're from the podcast, I'll give you 50% off on that single session as well. And so we can talk more about that over email. So either DM me at NadiaMunla.com on Instagram, or shoot me an email, Nadia@NadiaMunla.com. I will see you there. Now back to the episode.
Yeah. I think that I'm curious what your thoughts are on this, but I find that there's a rhetoric a lot in sort of the personal development world of like, you can have everything, that to me feels a little worrying, a little dangerous, and that I don't want to sound like a party pooper here, but I don't know that that's realistic, right? And I think that that rhetoric can be dangerous because it makes people feel a little bit like they're failing if they're trying to do everything all at once and it's not, you know, like at 100% in all the places. And And I think actually it was like Oprah and Michelle Obama of all people, but they were having a conversation that I was listening to, and they were like, you can have everything, just not all at the same time. And I thought that was a really beautiful way, a beautiful reframe, where it's like, of course you can like go after your dreams, do, you know, you have an insane amount of agency and power. And also there are chapters, and each chapter, like there's only so much, like you said, the energetic container that we hold. It's like, if we're holding, you know, three projects, intimacy with five people, three kids, like, it's just like, that's a lot. Right? Stuff with the body, like whatever, you know, there's all these different chapters that we just have to go, all right, what are the big pieces that we want to hold? And everything else sort of is the little pebbles in between that might, you know, there might be space for, and there might not. And so, yeah, I don't know. I just feel like that's been something I've really been working with, that I feel needs to be shifted, the conversation around just have it all. And I'm like, no, everyone's going to feel really bad about themselves.
Yeah.
Really quickly.
Yeah. And there's always something that you have to sacrifice in that. Like, sure. You know? Yeah. So I think that's more the question is like, what are you willing to sacrifice for it all? Mm-hmm. And it all being what there's enough time and energy and resources to actually do, or you start, yeah, like that was the edge I got to, was like, if I'm going to do something, I'm really going to do it. And I could feel that I couldn't really fully give myself to this in this time. There just wasn't enough time, space to do all of those things well, you know? So yeah, so I think there is like a sobering conversation around what's most important. And what do you actually really need to do also? Because I still see myself as a big pillar and part of this project. Like, I'm not stepping away from it. It's just my timeline is going to have to look a little bit different. And it's exactly what you said. You can have it all. Not right now. Yeah. You know, in the next year, maybe it'll be more aligned.
Yeah. Well, I mean, on that note, I'm curious to speak a little bit about relating openly as like a project, but then also just as a lifestyle and what that even means, right? And part of why I, other than just feeling so much resonance with you when I first met you, part of the reason why I sort of kept tracking your work and what you were doing over the years, although we haven't like met in the flesh in years now, was this piece around how beautifully open you were about sharing what was going on in your open relating openly, however we want to refer to it as. And as someone who myself is in a very kind of experimental is the word, I guess maybe, but just like I'm in an inquiry of like, I don't know what the right format of love and relating and community and family actually is for me. And I've just been very open about like navigating, like, okay, I try this, maybe I try that, and I will try that now, or I don't know what I'm trying. Right. So, in doing that, that also requires holding so many energies and being with like juggling so many balls. And so I'm curious, let's see, what's the question that wants to emerge from here? I think that it was really inspiring to watch you make the decision to, you know, you got pregnant and you decided, okay, I'm going to have this baby with now the light of your life. I'm curious, in the process of shifting your lifestyle a pretty significant amount, what are some things that came up for you that felt like really humbling and like important lessons that you would want to share with people like myself who are still figuring it out? Like, I'm like, am I going to be a mom? Do I, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, there's like an open relating conversation, and then there's like a parenting conversation.
That's true. Yeah.
To me, like the open relating one is almost easier than the parenting one. It's become so complex. Yeah, so some important pieces. Well, so, you know, right before I got pregnant was, I remember that as the happiest. Is my connection still okay?
Yeah, you're good now.
Sorry. Okay. Mm-hmm. Was the happiest I've ever been in my relating, like my relating quadrant of my life. It was like, I had two primary partners. We had more lovers. Everything was just like, it had just felt like, okay, this is it. Like, I figured out exactly my sweet spot. This is how I wanted to be forever, you know? And that was right before I got pregnant. And then I got pregnant. And the pregnancy was not planned. I didn't even actually really want children. If I'm honest, I didn't plan to become a mom. But in the opening with my partner, Leonard, we looked at one another. We're like, there's a soul that wants to come through us. And we were both just like, yeah, that, like, I can't not feel that. And so I had this like, okay, maybe like a year or two, like, I'm just going to let this new reality land. Maybe I'll have children. We'll have children together. There's obviously something here. And then a month later I was pregnant. So it was a lot for me to just navigate that new experience, but it felt very right. And I had this vision idea that the family that we were creating, because we were living all together, me, Booster, and Leonard, my two primary partners at that time, Sophie, who's Leonard's ex-partner before me, and then another woman called Erin, who was also like a lover. We were all living together, and this was going to be like our family, and we were going to raise this child together. And that didn't last very long. It started to change really fast, and I think it got real for everyone. And particularly Booster, who had been my partner at that point for 7 or 8 years. And I think it was too much for him, that new idea that he would stay in relationship to me and need to care about me and not be the father of the child that I was getting ready to birth. And I think that I have compassion for that. I mean, there's a part of me that's also hurt by that, because I really wanted him to show up at that time, but he just wasn't able to show up at that time. So we were in the transition process for most of my pregnancy. And the most difficult thing for me in retrospect is that when you're open relating and your heart goes through shifts and changes like this, it's really hard to compartmentalize. Like, it's really hard to be in a breakup with one partner and be totally in love with another partner. It's almost like, and I said this to Letter, I was like, I almost feel like I need to just break up with everyone right now and be single and then start back over, because actually separating one love from my life and then trying to show up in love and build something with another partner was just, they were completely conflicting needs and desires. Mm-hmm. And it really stretched me in a way. And I was pregnant. like so intense.
Wow.
It really stretched me. And yeah. I felt that like if I hadn't been pregnant, I would have just dumped not dumped everyone, but I would have just said, like, I need to close all these relationships for now. I need to go, you know, find myself for a few months somewhere different, and then I'll come back and put the pieces back together. Mm. But it has felt a little bit like, keeping something that was falling apart, like patching it up. My relationship life sense has felt a little bit like patchwork. Mm. Because it didn't feel the same as the prior one that felt like it got built in connection and in love and in yes. Where this one had a big tear right through the center. So I would say to keep that in mind. And, you know, I was talking to a girlfriend recently and she was in a similar situation. And she said, when I'm fighting with one partner, it's really hard to be in love with my other partner. It's just like the heart, I don't think the heart can switch like that. Mm. It's like when you're in one emotion, it's really present in your whole life. You can't just turn that off, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, definitely to try to be building when there's also a foundation of grief or loss can be really confusing to our system. So like hearing you in that story is like, yeah, you're like already your body is naturally just creating a you know, there is already building happening inside, but then to also be building on the outside while there's also grief on the outside, it's just like, it's a lot to work with, I think. I'm also struck by something, you know, I rarely get to talk. There's actually not, I don't, even though I relate openly or openly relate or whatever we want to call it. I'm not actually very much in a community. Like most of my friends are pretty monogamous and sort of standard. And so I don't get a chance to talk. Tinder, well, I don't know.
Robots.
No, I love you guys. I love you guys. I do. I know. Okay. Got it. Guilty. Yeah, it's always refreshing to talk to someone who has been through a different experience that maybe feels a little bit closer to mine, although it's still very different. And I'm curious what your thoughts are around the primal urges. Like, so what I'm speaking to specifically is around getting impregnated or impregnating is such a primal, right? Like it's just like the most basic core animal part of us, this procreation piece. And I know that for me, my boundary has always been like, I feel I can work with all sorts of unorthodox situations, but if I, you know, were deeply in love with someone who then was having a child with another woman, my primal, like when I feel into it, my body goes, ooh, I can't be there. I can't be around. I have to eject out of this situation. And I've really been sitting with like, you know, at what point, like, do we override that, you know, if that is true to us, or do we just honor it? And how do we work with these? Because there's a lot of primal urges that show up that aren't necessarily supporting a more evolutionary version of love, right? So it's like, it's this interesting push and pull there. I don't know if you have any thoughts around it since very present in your life.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm present to is, for me, since becoming a mother and being pregnant and now being a mom, there is a huge primal shift that has happened in my being around my beliefs about almost everything. Mm-hmm. And I was not prepared for that to the extent that it is. Like, I think I've been pretty like solid and secure in my being, and I had my stuff, you know, more or less worked through who I am as a person. And I couldn't have imagined how much was still left to shift in that, and how much just getting pregnant and having a child would change my beliefs about a lot of things. So I want to say that, like, primally, nothing in my life has shooken me and changed me like becoming a parent. And I don't think we can, I don't even think anyone can tell you now, because when people told me, I was like, yeah, I'll still be this, I won't, you know. And no, I'm very much like probably many other moms out there. Like, it's something to you. At the time when I was going through this, when I was pregnant and this whole thing with Booster, there, another woman asked him to get her pregnant. And he said yes. And so I was also at that time navigating the possibility of him getting another woman pregnant while I was pregnant. Mm. So I knew that primal betrayal of, like, you know, at the time he was still my primary attachment figure in my life. And there was like a no in me that no, that's not supposed to happen. You're not supposed to do that. I should be the person that you do that with.
Yeah.
And even now, what's really interesting, even with my partner, Leonard, parenting has been such a gnarly journey for me, and it has been so consuming and so much energy that, like, I have had the thought, because Leonard really wants to have another child or more children, and I'm almost like, you can go do that with someone else. I totally support you and want to encourage you, and like, please, like, this is where open relating is at its finest. Like, I love you. I still want to be with you. And I don't want to do that with you. So can you find someone else to do that? And it's like, so this is what I mean around, like, it's so confusing because I can connect to that. And there was like a pre-child Rachel who was much more connected to those primal instinctual things around possession and being claimed and having child and being the one impregnated. And now that I've done that, it's like, cool. I don't have those needs anymore. Like they just don't show up as like my primal needs now are very different. Mm-hmm. You know, I want someone to to watch my child and, you know, help and do the dishes and, you know, provide, you know, like there's a different primal set of things that makes it so that like takes a different back seat. And I'm curious how other parents are, but I think there is something really interesting that happens because my connection to open relating has softened and opened with so much light since having a child too. Whereas before there was this more like, yeah, I was just in more of what I would say is like the hormonal bath of the whole, like, you know, sexy, who's having sex with who. And now it's like, yeah, I just don't care anymore.
Yeah. I wonder if it's also to do with the fact that, you know, we all have this deep urge to be claimed. And pregnancy to me has always been the number one way to be claimed by a man. It's like, well, they literally have now put a seed inside you and now there is a baby growing. And so for me, there's this feeling of like the box has been checked. It's not so cognitive, but like, there's this like, oh, that urge, that need has been met. Once I've, you know, had a baby with someone, there's like a claiming that can never go away because now this legacy between us like exists. And I wonder if something about that primal urge starts to dissipate. Also, there's all these other needs that you have that are more important that I'm hearing are like, you know, taking up more space, but that somehow this one is no longer a need because it literally has been met.
Yeah. And that's the primal part. It's like, there was a lot of points in my pregnancy where my hormones changed my reality. Mm. And it became this like real question for me of like, who am I if I'm not dictated by my hormonal fluctuations? And that was like also a little bit of like a trippy inquiry to be in because you really are like that with the hormone. I just stopped breastfeeding a month ago. So I'm like, I feel like I'm finally just starting to like feel some semblance of who I am again, aside from being primally really dictated in my like, you know, I'm still very connected to my daughter and her needs and, you know, her survival and her thrival. But my body now is finally feeling like it's coming back into some kind of a state of being like a sovereign state, which feels really nice for this moment. So it is a big question that I've had of just like, you know, the body wants to procreate, like that's what we're here to do. And so, of course, all the drive is going towards that end of procreating, you know, and then once you have done the thing, all the energy goes towards keeping that child alive. You know, when a woman is breastfeeding, it's literally that like the energy in your body goes to your boobs. So like your there isn't energy, there isn't life force in your yoni when you're breastfeeding, really. I mean, some. But it's rare. It's not expected. Most women are really suffering from having a super low to no libido when you're breastfeeding. Mm. And people don't even think of that it's just like, so life force now is going towards procreation. Like we had to keep the baby alive. We don't need to worry about having more right now. We need to like nourish this one. And so the priorities just shift with that. And you have really no choice about it. It doesn't matter who Rachel is. Rachel is taken over by a biological instinct to procreate.
Mm. What an initiation. Wow. I wonder if I'll ever, I'm so open. I'm like, oh, maybe I'll have this experience. Maybe I won't. I have no idea. We'll see.
Yeah.
So I would love to, you know, since I'm the typical person, I guess, that you could speak this advice to, because I'm very much like the woman that you were pre-motherhood. But if you had to give advice to people who are navigating just like a new paradigm of relating and figuring out how to do it while also being aware of, you know, I'm 41, so I'm in a very particular spot in terms of my biological clock. We don't know exactly, but generally going a little downhill. At least science says so. I'm curious, when you think back, if there's anything you would have wanted to share with a younger version of yourself that share today for those who are in this inquiry or navigating these bizarre and loving experiences.
Yeah. I mean, I think one, and this might also just come with age, but I still feel it's important to say, which is just to slow down. Like, and it is this, that particularly in open relating, when you have more than one connection, it's almost like for every connection, it has like a 50% slowness, at least minimum, needs to happen. Like, multiple relating can't happen at the same speed that dyadic relating happens at. It's just too much information to process, and the nervous system needs time and space to catch up. When there's more energy, when there's more heat in the fire, like, you have to slow everything way down. I don't think I could say that one enough, because it, as a culture, we've just been in this dyadic relating for so long. And, you know, it's like that first year and a half it's pretty much just a dopamine ride, you know, and you're just in that fix. You just need your fix and you're in it. And then people want to take that and just overlay it and apply it right to open relating and do all the same things at the same speed. And they want their partner to just like get with it and like suck it up and like, this is good for us. And it just simply doesn't work like that. So you have to really work on the skill of practice and patience and really like taking your time and making sure that everyone is along for the ride. In my experience, when I've gone really fast and fast enough that there's a tear or a break or something something where there's repair needed, that repair takes a really long time to come back from. And so my advice, actually, I got this advice from Daniel Schmachtenberger, which was always in open relating, build on successes. So go slow enough that every new step that you take is another win. And then you get to build on that win and then build on that win. Because when there's a rupture in this style of relating, it's just, it doesn't, for whatever reason, it really hits some of those abandonment, betrayal wounds deeper than normal dyadic stuff does.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, one last question I have for you.
Okay.
I'm curious if you feel there's certain people, like there's a certain makeup in someone's nervous system that gives them more propensity to relate openly versus other nervous systems, or if you think everyone has the ability and the capacity and it's just a matter of whether they choose to do so or not.
Yeah. Yes. And I want to say one thing. For me, open relating is being in more, having a relationship that is more than monogamy. So it's open beyond the primary couple. And for me, relating openly is openly sharing how I relate with the world. That would be the distinction we started teaching a little bit while through a brand called Relating Openly. And that was really the vision of that brand, was like, how can we stop hiding the way that we're relating and keeping it behind closed doors? But those edgy alternative styles, how can we bring those into the open and be seen and vulnerable in the way that my heart wants to be loved? So anyway,
it's an important distinction. Yeah.
Yeah. And Yes, for sure. I definitely think that there are people who have a larger propensity towards this and some who just shouldn't. I definitely don't think this is for everyone. 100,000% do not think this is for everyone. I wouldn't say I have it narrowed down in a way to what those boxes are that someone fits into or not. I think that there's some, for sure, early childhood abandonment material. If that is there, any kind of really abandonment material is going to make it challenging. But there are certain people in the world, like, you know, like Reid Mahalko is a great example. This man is just like, he was born to open relate. Like he couldn't, he's like the epitome of this. Like, I can't even ever imagine that monogamy was ever even a concept in his being. And so there are people, I don't know what that is that makes him that way. That would, he'd be a good person to talk to. To just say like, what is that? But he has something. And, you know, it could also just be a secure attachment. You know, there are a few of the other people I know who are securely, like really, truly securely attached, like had an epic upbringing with parents who loved them and cared about them and are just like, they do open relating really well. It's really natural. It's really easy. It's really safe. They come from love. Like that is the person who I have seen succeed most, is someone who just says like, I had a beautiful childhood. My parents were amazing. I was really loved and I love to give and receive that love. Like those people are thriving here.
Yeah, I think I'm going to continue to thank you for your perspective on it. Cause yeah, and me and my friends are always curious. They're always asking me, they're like, what do you think it is? Like, why can you do this and we can't? I'm like, I have no idea. Like, I wish I could tell you. I do not know, but it's just my path.
I'm sure there's something also astrologically that's in your chart, maybe in our charts that is, you know, I think there's a lot of other people too, like myself included, who are on a healing journey with it. Like there's some people who have a propensity towards how do I keep growing and healing and moving towards my next evolution. And there's some people who are like, well, this is me and I'm really happy here and I just want to be loved here and I don't need anything else, you know? And I think it's just different styles.
Yeah. I think also like you speak to something important, which is our soul's work. Because when I look at all the relationships, romantic relationships on both sides of my family, I don't have a single model of a healthy relationship on either side. And both of
me too.
Yeah. Both of my parents struggled so much. I mean, they both had two different marriages that didn't work out. And like, when I say didn't work out, not just that they're not together, like they hate each other. You know what I mean? Like, it's like not a, like it's a dysfunctional ending. Yeah.
Me too. And, yeah. And so, same thing.
Yeah. So I'm like, no, I don't think it's because I didn't grow up with that secure, like beautiful model of love at all. And, it was definitely not safe or there was definitely abandonment. So I do think for some of us, yeah, it might actually be for me. I always feel into, I would love, like so much of my deep soul's work in this lifetime is actually to be the guinea pig and to try out all these different ways to find what I like to call me and one of my, I don't know, by one of the men in my life, referred to as, you know, love with a capital L. This is just like, what is it that we need to experiment with to really find this place of unconditional love inside of us? What needs to shift? What needs to exist? And that's different for each person. But I think going on that journey is, it's just like, there's this like pull in that direction, even though sometimes I'm like, I don't want to do any of this stuff. Why am I here?
Yeah. Totally. I totally get it. Something I want to say that you reminded me of as you were speaking is, I can't tell you how many times people reach out to me and say, like, I really want this open relating. It's like, it is my, like, I know that this is what I'm supposed to do, but my partner isn't interested at all. And how do we make this work? And to those people, my answer is always the same. It will not work. Like, with two people who want to do it, it can be really hard. But with someone who wants it and one person who does not want it, it is impossible and it's totally not worth it. So that is like, that is a pretty good indication to me of a fork in the road, or a difficult decision needing to be made. Mm-hmm. But I would never expect that you could force or convince or coerce a partner into wanting this. Like, the place that you have to want it from is so, like what you were just speaking from, you have to want it that much. Mm-hmm. Because it's going to be challenging. It's yeah. going to be, you know, if normal relating is already what it is, this is all just amplified on top of that. It's that nothing gets easier. Your soul has to be like, no, this is my journey here on earth. Like, I came here to do this. And then you have a shot.
Exactly. Really, really great way of putting it. Awesome. Thank you so much. I know that a lot of people fell in love with your heart and your just open shares and will want to follow you. So where is the best place for them to find you? Your writing, it's just beautiful writing. Like, I love what you write time. So
thank you.
Where do they find
me? The best place to find me, I'm an old school Facebook girl. I just like my personal Facebook profile is kind of where it's at. I'm still figuring out all the business special effects. At Rachel Rickards on Facebook, or also Rachel.Rickards on Instagram. You know, things are going there now too. My website has been thefieldfacilitatortraining.com, but I actually just bought a new URL, which I'm really excited about, which is thefield.com, the-field. So that'll be soon in the next couple of days. I don't know when this will go live, but that'll be where I'll be hosting my work going forward.
Awesome. Great. So people over there could sign up and get waitlisted for future rounds.
Totally. Great. Yeah. Awesome. There's a waitlist up now. Yeah.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much. Super sweet. Now I have to interview you next time.
I'm ready. I
want to ask you all these questions back.
I love talking. So
cool. All right. Well, we'll talk about it. I might be in, I think I'm going to be running an event in California in early December, mid-December. So I might circle back through. We'll see if I circle. My brother lives in Denver, so I might come back through Boulder at some point too.
Ooh, fun. Well,
yeah,
I'll probably be here.
Yeah. Cool.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed the guest on this episode, you can head on over to the show notes to get more info on their bio, their work, their website, and all the good stuff. I love you guys so much. Thank you for listening. We would love for you to rate and review the show, and I'd love to know your takeaways from the episode. You can do that by DMing me on Instagram at Nadia Munla.